Our next speaker is a health scientist at the VA Medical Center in Bedford, Massachusetts. He's also an assistant professor at Boston University, the School of Public Health. So, anyway, I just want to call up Dr. McInnes and give a presentation.
So do you think yours was on a timer?
I think because I practiced it on a timer, but I didn't realize it was
right.
Loaded like
so
that.
Maybe this will work.
Yeah, hopefully
great. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm relatively new to this field. And unlike David and Rhonda here has done work really in the field, it's really a pleasure to be here to give a talk. I came into this through my work in the VA, where I've been for about 5 or 6 years, and initially working with HIV, but many of our patients with HIV also happen to be homeless, so kind of got pulled in. Technology has always been an interest of mine, or at least for the last 5 or 10 years. I know I'm supposed to have a slide that says something about relationships, and I don't have any relationships to disclose, except my wife is in this audience or in the conference somewhere. I don't know if that counts, but geez, that's one relationship. So I'm not able to the pad. Okay, great. Okay, I went back too far. Yeah. And backwards?
Yeah, just on those things were easier.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Collaborators, most of these are from the VA. A couple are in the audience. Karen Eirich-Garg, who was very helpful in a lot of our survey methodology. Beth Ann Petrakis is in the audience as well. Leon Saw is also in the audience. All of them have played really important roles in this work. Sorry, eventually I'll get this right. This caught my eye a little bit ago. The New York Times was reporting that about 60 million are still unconnected, and they're maybe shut out of things like jobs, government services, et cetera. My question and our research is kind of looking at, well, what about homeless populations and technology? Are they being shut out of access to technology and the benefits that come with it? So just a quick overview. So we wanted to understand whether information technologies could be a useful tool with homeless populations. We're going to talk mostly about veterans today, but I think things apply for other homeless groups as well. We conducted a survey, a one-time cross-sectional survey, and we also did, for a smaller subset, qualitative in-depth interviews. And what I hope either this forum or things that I'm thinking about now are, you know, once we start to kind of digest the lessons that I'm presenting and that we've been hearing about, how do we kind of tailor technology, think about how it's used for this population ways to make sure that it is inclusive, and, you know, what are the things that have to be different about its use as opposed to, you know, my teenage kids who are using technology maybe slightly differently. So I wanted to start with a few of the results in case there's a fire alarm or an earthquake. You know, at least you all have heard some of the headline issues. So we found, and there are a lot of methodological issues we could discuss about this group. It's a biased sample, just in Massachusetts. It's in veterans. I could go on about these. Nevertheless, 89% of our homeless veterans in this study had a mobile phone. Of those, about 70% were using texting. And again, of those people, about a third had smartphones. 79% said they used the internet. You know, very briefly, the issue of homelessness in veterans has gotten a fair amount of press. On point in time counts, there are about 62,000 homeless veterans. If you have a broader definition of homelessness, there's probably 200,000 or so unstably housed at risk for homelessness using homelessness-related services in the VA. I don't really need to talk too much to this group about the various health challenges. I'll go on, except to say mortality rates are very high, and there are many other indicators that would suggest homeless and homeless veterans have very poor health. Very briefly, the methods for this survey, we went to 5 sites around Massachusetts, mostly in the Boston metropolitan area. The only one that was more of a rural/urban area is this multi-service organization. It's in Western Massachusetts, a nonprofit, but it happens to be on the campus of a VA medical center. Then there was a domiciliary. In VA terms, that's a substance use program, usually about 100 days for veterans who are homeless. 2 emergency shelters in Boston area, a VA transitional housing program, and a community grant per diem program, which was also run by the same organization that ran those 2 emergency shelters. The quick point here is, we collected the basics, demographics, where people lived prior to the location where we were interviewing them. And then we spent a fair amount of our questions, and this was an interviewer-administered survey, on things like access to technology. What do you own? What do you use? How do you use them? And what would you think about their use for health-related purposes? The barriers issue has come up. I think the question to Rhonda was about barriers to use. We asked some questions about barriers as well. We also did, with a subset of 30 qualitative in-depth interviews, about 30 minutes, and we focused our analysis primarily on field notes we took. We do have transcripts so we can continue analyses. And those were just getting into a little bit more depth on some of the issues that were covered in the survey questionnaire. We did frequency analyses. We did some thematic coding. There were a group of 3 of us who did the coding of the interviews and tried to come to consensus on the codes we were using. Very briefly, in terms of the demographic, so largely male, this is a veteran population, largely in the 50 to 70-year-old age group, 72% were in that age group. It was largely white, but 22% African-American. The current housing, those are just the percents reflected in our sampling, so this isn't to say that this is where most veterans are living, this is where we went. And you can see that 2 of the organizations were VA organizations. I had showed these earlier, but about 89% said they had a mobile phone. About 70% were using texting. A third of their phones were smartphones. Internet use was quite common, almost 80%, with half of them using the internet on a daily basis. And 86% said they had an email address. I'll go over these kind of quickly. There are 2 back-to-back that show this kind of graph. These were yes or no questions we asked people about the different technologies. This one is on mobile phone calling, and internet. The next one is on emailing and texting. And we would just ask, do you use, for example, your mobile phone to call family and friends? Do you use your mobile phone for health-related purposes? So fairly broad questions. People would just say yes or no. But I'd like to focus just a second on this group, which I kind of consider kind of essential, really important day-to-day services or needs. Mobile phone is used quite a bit. Internet a little less so. But for health, for VA benefits, for transportation issues, and for housing issues, these technologies are being used. Interestingly, friends and family is way at the top. The email and texting is used a lot less in general, and less on these key services, but they are being used. Email a bit more than texting. Friends and family still very high. This slide and the next one are just some 2x2 kind of associations to see whether location, residence, has any association with technology. This one was looking at texting. It was marginally significant or borderline significant. And this was on the question of where you were living prior to the location we interviewed you. I think the main point is, emergency shelter, people who are living in emergency shelters, at least in this group, were probably somewhat less likely to be using texting compared to people living in other places. And there were two other associations that had some significance. They were related to internet use and having an email address. And this is now in relation to your current housing location. And similarly, the folks that were in the emergency shelter tended to be less likely to either be using the internet or have an email address compared to some of the other groups. This is, I think, a really important issue, this and the next slide on barriers. So if we're trying to think about interventions and using these technologies, our group was focusing a fair amount on mobile phones because we had a texting project in mind. But the first number is a little bit concerning, that in a given year, our population, about 45%, had a phone number change. So if you imagine we've enrolled a group in some kind of program, and then we get their phone number at the beginning of the program, we're going to lose almost half of them. So we have to think about how do we overcome, you know, that issue. Phone numbers, phones breaking, phones lost, phones stolen were also important issues. So this was over the last 12 months, and then we asked about more kind of day-to-day issues related to mobile phones. So the last 30 days, phone running out of power. That one I can see, you know, more easily surmounting that. But still, 35% running out of minutes was another concern. Maybe not as big as I might have thought. Briefly, I have just two slides on qualitative findings. We were, of course, very interested in people's willingness to use technologies for health. Already, people were getting some reminders for appointments on their cell phones. They said they were connecting with people like social workers and doctors. This participant said, they always check on me. We were curious about different modes of using cell phone. What about automatic voice reminders versus a text reminder? There seemed to generally be people dissatisfaction with, sorry, I have to see how many minutes to go. Five, okay, thank you. The voice messages were a concern for people. When you answer it, you can't shut it off, and you're stuck with it, and it eats up all your time, and you don't know who it is. So this person had a lot of gripes with the voice reminders. Text messages, we heard this frequently, like a text message reminder. You say, well, you have something solid in front of you. You don't have to write it down. You can save it, and it's there. I mean, you have all the information right there. That was a common refrain. Many of our respondents were in their 50s, 60s. Like me, they were forgetting lots of things. And to know it's on your phone is really helpful. Very briefly, we asked about a variety of kind of health-related messaging, and in all of these cases, there was quite a bit of openness to using text messaging. Appointment reminders, reminders to get lab work done, medication refills, kind of an outreach. How are you doing? We haven't seen you in a while. Why don't you call us, or would you like us to call you? The one that there was a little bit of hesitation about was telling people that their lab results were ready. Would you like that kind of text message? And even though we weren't talking about sending people their lab results, some felt it would make them anxious just to know somebody in the health center knows my results, and it's going to be 2 weeks before I see the doctor, and I'm going to be anxious about what, you know, I'm positive, whatever. I think they like the idea of just showing up in an appointment, and the doctor says, oh, the lab results just came in yesterday, you know, here they are. There are downsides that people mentioned. Some were concerned about getting too many text messages. Some were concerned about the costs of using up text messages and phone calls. Some said, look, I just don't text that often. I don't even check my inbox very much. And some said, yeah, I know this text messaging stuff, but I don't know how to do it. I could use some training. And as kind of a summary and the kinds of questions we're thinking about now, first is there does seem, at least in this somewhat biased, very specific population, a fair amount of access to technology, mobile phones, internet, email, et cetera. There are some barriers, you know, we'll all have to think about as we use those tools. Several I mentioned, the phone numbers that change, lost phones, broken phones, stolen phones. one of the issues we're thinking about in an intervention where we are texting veterans is, do we want to try to be more inclusive by giving out phones if a veteran says, I don't have a phone? Right now, we're limiting our work to veterans who have a cell phone and can show they know how to do texting. But I know other researchers and projects give out cell phones and their advantages and disadvantages. And then the last is kind of, again, just for an open kind of question of, you know, what are some of the ways that we can use these technologies to improve services for this population? I think the presentations we just heard raised a lot of the issues that we'll have to think about and tailoring it for this population. Thank you very much.
Anything specific to?
Yeah, is that, do you know where people got their cell phones from? Like in Chicago, a lot of people get cell phones. Homeless people get cell phones from government providers, like free cell phones. So are most people paying for their cell phones, or do they get free cell phones?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag, and others in the group may know better exactly. But oh, yeah, sorry. So where are they getting their cell phones? Free cell phones is growing. There, people would say, I have an Obama phone, meaning it's a government program that gives out free phones. They'll often set up booths in VA medical centers. But there were a variety of ways people, you know, would get it from, they used to be married, they split up, they had a phone at that point, their spouse keeps them on their plan. They, you know, some are getting various amounts of income and they buy them. So a big mixture there. Yeah, in the way, in the back?
Did you have a record of keeping the, in your data collection, a record of the number of individuals who been involved in the criminal justice system, i.e. incarcerated? You did ask the question about prior phones. Did you ask for prior history and what were the results? This is relevant to prisoner reentry directly.
No. Yeah, except for that one question where we said where you were living before here, where we had people self-report, but we didn't record the history.
Relevant,